So, is it that time in your life yet? Do you feel like your family is complete and you and your spouse want to not worry about changing that? Well, the decision can be difficult, but the recovery doesn't have to be. After your vasectomy, you gotta get testes. Doctors usually recommend a jockstrap and ice for your boys to help with comfort. Well, testes is the best of both worlds. This is for the man who is out on the go and needs to get things done. You get the ice packs from the freezer, strap up, and saddle up. The packs give you at least 20 minutes of comfort, even if you're just sitting around watching the game. And most important, guys, no wet spots. Put on the jockstrap under your briefs and go about your day. They come in three sizes, medium, large, and extra large, to get your right fit. Now head on over to testes.com. That's testeeze.com. testeeze.com. Your wife is going to thank you for the snip, and your testes are going to be thanking me. Hello everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of Day of Spring Discussions. I'm your host, Sean McGahee, and this is a show where we talk about movies, TV, sci-fi, fantasy, comic books. If you geek out about it, we're going to talk about it. You can listen to Day of Spring Discussions on iTunes, YouTube, Podomatic, Patreon, Spotify, Google Podcast, Amazon Music, wherever, guys. While you're there, go and rate, review, subscribe, then head on over to the Facebook group and Twitter account and join in the discussion. Don't forget, dayspringdiscussions@gmail.com is there if you have any more lengthy comments or questions. And you can find me personally, SlimDayspring12, on Twitter and Instagram. Well, hello everyone. Hope you all are enjoying your weekend. It is Sunday night here in Austin, Texas. Kind of a good weekend. Now, I'll get this out of the way, of course. I did not do a show last week. Basically, what happened was I had not finished Star Wars Visions, and that's what I wanted to talk about mainly, but I had to watch the last couple episodes, didn't get it till Sunday night, and I planned on doing an episode on Monday, didn't get a chance to do it, and of course, the week just got away from me. That's what happens, guys. You know, like I mentioned, this is a hobby for me. I don't get paid for it. I do this because I enjoy talking about this stuff and discussing it with you guys as well. It's low on my priorities list, unfortunately. But I will get to Star Wars Visions in just a few minutes. So yeah, that's why I didn't do a show last week. Like I said, I usually like to record on Sunday, post up Sunday night or Monday morning. So that's that. Now, just to let you know, next week I will not have a show either. My wife and I are taking my daughter up to our old stomping grounds, I guess you could say, Chicago. That's right, the city we both love so much. One of my good buddies, Bryce, is getting married this weekend. I'm in the wedding, so we're going to enjoy that. We're also going to enjoy a little bit of the city, see some family while we're there, even go to a Blackhawks preseason game. So we're super excited about that. So we'll not be having a show next week either, which stinks because a major movie comes out next weekend, James Bond 007 No Time to Die with Daniel Craig. I won't be able to see it for a couple of days, probably it'll be Wednesday, Thursday maybe of next week before I actually see it. So that stinks. So I won't have a show next week, and I really won't have a show to like actually see the film and can talk about it. So other than that, I think I'm all set to go, guys. I got my topics brought up. Now, for those of you who don't listen regularly, here's how it goes. Throughout the week, I and everyone else post stories up on the Day Spring Discussions Facebook and Twitter account to talk about stuff that is happening, talk about movies, TV shows, and the sci-fi comic book genre, and we discuss stuff on the social media accounts. And then when I get a chance, like today, I like to hop on here, go through about two or three of my favorite topics for the last week, and then give a more in-depth opinion about them. You guys continue to fire back on the social media grounds, and like I said, we discuss stuff. But yeah, I think I'm all set. Now, normally when I do this, I have some kind of beverage in front of me, and it's usually either coffee, because it's like mid-afternoon when I record, or if it's an evening like this, I used to have like a glass of wine, maybe a glass of whiskey, something like that. But I went with hot chocolate. I got it in my Mandalorian mug. And just some hot chocolate sounded good. I did some drinking this weekend while my wife and daughter were away. So I really didn't want to drink. And of course, it's too late in the evening for coffee. So I settled on a different hot beverage with some soothing hot chocolate in my Mandalorian mug. So yeah, I think I'm all set to go. All right, guys. So before I get to the main topics, something I always like to do, which is a little segment I call What's Got My Interest. Now, this ties into what I was just talking about, No Time to Die, James Bond. I have spent this weekend running through the Daniel Craig James Bond films, kind of reviewing them, getting myself ready for No Time to Die. Now, a while ago, I thought about maybe trying to rewatch all the James Bond movies, like all of them. It was a little bit more difficult to find them, but just as an FYI, Pluto TV, the free TV app, they have all the James Bond films except for the Daniel Craig ones on demand in that section. If you can suffer through the commercials, you know, go ahead and do that. But I thought about trying to watch all of them. But the problem is, I didn't have the time for it. I tried to start. I went all the way back to Dr. No with Sean Connery several weeks ago. And it took me like several attempts just to get through the first half hour of it. Just because I kept getting pulled away, having to stop. Just things came up. Is what it was. And, you know, for movies that I haven't seen or TV shows that I haven't seen, I like to give it my full attention. Like, if I'm on a trip or whatever, like I'm about to go on, I'll load up my tablet with books and movies and stuff to entertain myself on the plane, but it'll never be something that I haven't seen because I get interrupted so much that it's not something I can focus on. So when I see things for the first time, I want to, you know, be focused, no distractions. So yeah, I kept getting distracted is what happened. So I couldn't do that, but I could at least watch four movies. So I settled on the Daniel Craig ones, watched Casino Royale, watched Quantum of Solace, and I watched Skyfall yesterday. Still got to watch the latest one, Spectre, which came out 6 years ago. I can't believe it came out 6 years ago. Wasn't a big fan of Spectre. Casino Royale is my favorite. And then with Quantum of Solace, I know it's not people's favorite either, but I recommend watching it right after Casino Royale. It's a very good continuation of what goes on in Casino Royale. As an individual film, not great. As a sequel to Casino Royale, I think it works pretty well. And then, of course, Skyfall, which is a lot of people's favorite. I rewatched it because I didn't hate it, but I wasn't as big a fan of it as I think some people are. Rewatched it, and it's really that last part there when they have like the Home Alone, I guess you would call it, ending to it all. That kind of got me. The rest of it was good, but that kind of got to me. And then Spectre, I wasn't a fan of Spectre when I saw it in theaters, so I think I've only seen it once. So I'm looking forward to going back and rewatching it, you know, seeing what it's all about and kind of going from there. But like I said, I'm not a huge fan of the James Bond franchise, but I'm a guy. It's an action movie about a suave, sophisticated, cool, kick-ass character who gets the girl and, you know, drives cool cars and all that stuff. So there's at least, you know, a part of me that likes that type of James Bond character, much like how a lot of people really like the character of Batman because he's kicks ass and got the cool gadgets and yada, yada, yada. We're all just boys on the inside wanting to play with toys is what it is. So anyway, I'm all set for No Time to Die. Unfortunately, I can't watch it for, you know, another week and a half or so whenever I get back from my trip. So that's going to suck. So hopefully I get no spoilers until then, although I doubt it, but we'll go from there, guys. But if you're excited for No Time to Die, fire back, let me know. And also, of course, you know, James Bond, your thoughts on him in general. I'd love to hear and discuss the franchise. One thing, you know, I grew up on the Pierce Brosnan films. And when you look at Pierce Brosnan versus Daniel Craig, because those are the two James Bonds that I really know, there's definitely the difference where Pierce Brosnan is more the suave kind of James Bond, where Daniel Craig is more the hardened, you know, warrior, I guess, almost. Cold-blooded, I think, really, would be a good way to say it, too. But it's different, you know, how everyone puts their own spin on Bond. And while I haven't seen a lot of the previous films, I think I've seen the Timothy Dalton ones, but can't remember really watching any of the Roger Moore or Sean Connery ones. But Pierce Brosnan, Daniel Craig, I know very well. I could probably tell you one of the Timothy Dalton ones. But Anyway, guys, James Bond, let me know what you think. If you're excited for No Time to Die, let's discuss it. Okay, so let's get into the main topics here. I'll tell you what, I'm probably going to start with the one that I have the least amount to say. So Friday mornings, usually what I like to do is I like to hop online before I go to work. And Friday is when a lot of the streaming services put their new content up. Now, Disney, for some reason, has decided to add their TV shows on Wednesday and their movies on Friday, which I really hate because me and my wife and some friends of ours got into a good habit of watching the Marvel shows, getting together Friday night to watch the Marvel shows. And then, of course, with Loki, they started on Wednesdays, middle of the week, school week, work week. It just screwed everything up. So I'm kind of pissed off about that because we always had a good time on Friday nights with that. So everyone else puts their stuff up on Friday. And one thing I've been waiting to come to HBO Max is the animated movies Batman The Long Halloween. They've been out for months on physical copy, but they just popped up on HBO Max. You can watch part one and part two. The DC animated stuff, for the most part, I enjoy. I really enjoyed the animated cinematic universe they were making, where it started with Flashpoint Paradox and ended with Justice League Dark. It was Apocalypse War. I really enjoyed it. I liked the animation style. I liked the continuity. I thought it was really good. Since then, I really haven't enjoyed them going back to the individual stories. And it's not about, you know, the fact that they're not connected. It's just I feel like the quality hasn't been good. Like Superman, Man of Tomorrow, I wasn't a big fan of. And then this Batman Long Halloween, it's been years since I've read the comic books. So I couldn't tell you, you know, details about the story, the broad strokes of it, I remember, but not too much of the details because it's been so long. So I sat down, I watched part one and part two this weekend. Like I said, my family was gone. I had a little bit of time and it was okay. It wasn't really what it was is you could tell that you know, it was very much like almost watching animated The Dark Knight, you know, because the three main characters were Batman, Harvey Dent, Commissioner Gordon. They're trying to catch a criminal. And in Dark Knight, it was the Joker. And this one, it's Holiday. You could see definitely where, you know, maybe Christopher Nolan kind of pulled in, or David Goyer pulled in some storylines from The Long Halloween for The Dark Knight, which I totally understand. And that's what it was. Is I was watching it, and I honestly felt like, you know, I'd rather be watching The Dark Knight and get a little more out of it. Is what it was. I mean, I knew what was going to happen at the end. I knew who the killer was. Not even because I read the previous material. It's just that you could tell after the end of part one who Holiday was. But again, it's not one of the better DC animated films. The voice casting was okay. Jensen Ackles led as Batman. I really liked probably Josh Duhamel. How you say it? Duhamel. I liked him a lot as Harvey Dent. I thought he did a really good Harvey Dent Two-Face with that. Other than that, you know, the rest of the cast wasn't overly noticeable or, you know, where it really stuck out for me. But like I said, it wasn't as good. I mean, honestly, while I was watching this, I was thinking how much I'd rather be A, watching The Dark Knight, or B, watching the Batman animated series. You know, especially like the Two-Face origin stories or the stuff, you know, with Commissioner Gordon or whatever. It made me want to watch better Batman things is what it was. So anyway, guys, if you have checked out Batman The Long Halloween Part 1 and Part 2, I want to hear your thoughts as well. What you think worked, didn't work. I want to discuss it. Let's talk about it, guys. Fire back, of course, on the social media groups, Facebook and Twitter, and dayspringdiscussions@gmail.com. All right, one down, two to go, guys. Let's jump into it, and let's talk about what I wanted to talk about originally last week, if I was going to do a show, which is Star Wars Visions. Now, this, of course, is Lucasfilm and Disney partnering up with some of the bigger animation studios in Japan, and basically letting them do Star Wars stories. Now, one thing they said, of course, when they announced this, is that it was not going to be part of Star Wars canon. It wasn't connected to anything. You're not going to see characters really you know, aside from a few. And, you know, you're not going to say where it is in the timeline. It's just like, you know, someone like Lucasfilm gave all these animators and storytellers the permission to just create their own Star Wars stories. And, you know, it was different because it had that Japanese style to it. You could definitely tell, not only animation, but also mythology-wise, you could tell that, it was very different from other creators we get here in America or on this side of the pond, I guess you would call it. Now, truth be told, I've never been one for anime. It's not one of the things where, like, I absolutely hate it. But every time I've tried to get into it or given it a try, even some of the better stuff like, you know, Dragon Ball Z or Akira or Howl's Moving Castle, I give it a try and I just cannot get into it. I don't know if you consider Voltron technically anime or a version of anime, but that's probably about as far as I go when it comes to that stuff. Never been a big anime guy, but I do recognize that it does have its own audience. And also, its popularity gives it a sense that it has a sense of, while I don't appreciate it, I can see why other people do. Totally understand. It's usually some great storytelling. So, wasn't super excited in that sense, but Star Wars. Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars. I'll watch anything of Star Wars, unless it's like Lego Freemaker Adventures, in which case, no thanks. So I walk into it with a very open mind, and I gotta say, it was pretty cool. It took me two nights to get through it. I think I watched like two or three episodes one night, and then I watched, you know, the rest of it on another night. And overall, it was fun to just watch these people, these creators, make Star Wars and not have any limitations as to what they can do and bring their own character and personality to it. It found very refreshing, I think. Now, I didn't say I loved it, especially some of the episodes, but I did, you know, appreciate what they were trying to do, what Lucasfilm was allowing them to do. I thought it was really cool. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm a canon junkie. I read my books, I read the comics, I pay attention to the cartoons and all that stuff. But, you know, just when they said flat out, hey, this is going to be coming out and it's not going to be canon related, kind of freed my mind a little bit to not stop and think, okay, where's this in the timeline? You know, where's this character at? What's going on? Where are the Jedi at? All this other stuff. Just kind of freed my mind from all of those chains and just tried to enjoy the stories for what they were. And for the most part, I did enjoy them. And just briefly going through them real quick, I'll share my thoughts on them. I'll tell you that. So, episode one, the duel. I will say this. I feel like episode one was the strongest episode, and episode nine was the weakest episode. So, I see why they put episode one and episode nine, honestly, in my opinion. The duel, and this is interesting because with this, they're also coming out with a book, I believe, that kind of continues this story. There are no plans to really continue any of these other shorts, even though some of them, or a lot of them, end on a cliffhanger. But they may continue, they may not. They may have another visions, from what I heard, because this one seems to be pretty successful. But I think it's interesting that, like I said, this one, out of all of them, they pick to continue the story in another form of media, meaning that I'm probably not the only one who felt like this was the strongest story out of all of them that we can play with, that we can learn more about and have more fun with. And of course, if you guys haven't seen the episodes, I'm going a little spoilery here, so you've been warned. The duel, like I said, what I found interesting, of course, it was pretty much this rogue Ronin coming in and helping the village defend them from the bad guys that are trying to pillage, you know, the townspeople, I guess you would say. And of course, this Ronin character, he faces off against a Darksider or Sith. I don't know if they really call her what it is. And you think he's just a Jedi and he's going to pull out his lightsaber and it's red. And then you find out he's got all these red crystals. So it's like, does he hunt Sith? Or he can't be a Jedi really with a red lightsaber. Who is this guy? Why is he doing good things but using bad guy weapons, you know? I guess is what, you know, my Star Wars brain is thinking about there. And there's a story. There's a past with this character. And I cannot wait to read about it and hear more about it in the book that's coming out. I forget what it's called, honestly. No, I don't remember, but it's coming out soon. I think it's this month. Next up was Tatooine Rhapsody. And this one, looking at it, looking at the animation style, looking at what it was, I wouldn't really think of myself as liking it, but I really did enjoy it. I really enjoyed that there were these characters, this band, that had nothing else to offer. The only way they could help themselves, help each other, save one of their own, was to play music, you know, and this fallen Jedi who turned his lightsaber into a microphone, which is super cool. I can't wait to buy that toy. Was just really cool. And it was a story, I think, you know, rooted in the fact that, like I said, it was you had Boba Fett and Jabba in there, characters we actually recognize, but it was a story about friendship and, you know, we're all special and have skills that make us special, and we have to find a way to use those skills the best we can. And, you know, this former Padawan, former Jedi, had the skill of music along with his friends, and the only way to save their other friend is to use their skill and art to play and hopefully appease Jabba, that he would not kill the member of their band, their friend. And it looks like it happened. And, you know, it's cute, it's fun, it's nothing too serious, but not all Star Wars has to be super serious. Just not like all Marvel or all DC have to be super serious as well, guys. And that's, again, you get those different types of stories. And, you know, one of those stories, you wouldn't think I'd like it, but I did. And I love the song. I might download the song, actually, that they sang just for the kick of it. But I got a lot of fun with it, guys. Let me know what you think about it. The next one was The Twins. Super serious, super different style, super anime. Like, when I think of anime style and the grand scale of the animation and storytelling, this is what I think of. You know, these two characters born to be dark side users, and they have a specific purpose. One of them turns away from it. It's very big and epic in scale. It leaves off on a cliffhanger. Would I want to see more? Yes, but not probably in my top three that I'd love to see a continuation for. It was entertaining, but nothing that I would say, oh yeah, I want to know more about these characters. I want to learn more about their backstory and where they're going and all this. And yeah, you know, we already have some twins in the Star Wars galaxy that are pretty famous and pretty interesting. I don't really need these two to go along with it, but again, it's my own personal choice. Episode 4 was The Village Bride. What's this one? A Jedi on the run takes in the unique customs of a remote village under threat by a warlord. One of the more forgettable ones, I think, in my eyes. It wasn't horrible, but it's not one that I'm going to go back and rewatch. You know, if you think of ones I'm going to go back and rewatch, The Duel and Tatooine Rhapsody, I think, are ones that I go back and rewatch. That was not one of them. Episode 5, The Ninth Jedi. This has been one of the more favorite ones. From what I've been reading online, the word sabersmith. I mean, just that. When I read the description, when they were making the episodes and they came out with the episode descriptions, and they said the word sabersmith, you immediately had my attention and probably the attention of a lot of people. Where, you know, it's about these characters, the Jedi are dying out, the Sith are hunting them, and it's not about these Jedi making their own lightsabers. Someone specifically makes the lightsabers, and you know, your kyber crystal determines your color of your lightsaber, and it's not, it has to do with how strong you are on the Force, your connection to the Force, all these different things, almost changing the mythology a little bit. But again, it's not connected to canon, so it's okay. You know, it's okay to play with a little bit, and especially when you go back to, you know, longtime Star Wars fans who, you know, remember Star Wars in the late 80s, early 90s, before the prequels came out to set up more rules in regards to the Jedi Order. We didn't have a lot in regards to the mythology of the Jedi, minus some comic books by Dark Horse called Tales of the Jedi. So, you know, after the first couple of films, we had to kind of guess what the Jedi were like. And, you know, this was an idea, I'm sure, in a lot of people's minds of how the Jedi worked, and it could have been cool if it did, but, you know, we're still happy with what we got for the most part, I think. But again, just a really cool episode, I think, kind of flipping it a little bit as far as how lightsabers, how dark side users, how all that works. And again, this is probably one of the ones that I would like to see more of in regards to a continuation of the story. A lot of these, of course, are all, you know, coming of age stories too, because that's what Star Wars is, you know, when it comes to Luke and Anakin and Rey, they're all coming of age stories rooted in old mythology, which goes back to the old samurai films, of course, of lore. And it's interesting coming full circle with all of it around too. So that's super cool. The next one is TOB1. See what they did there? See what they did there? And this one, again, it's one of my less favorite ones, again, too. But it's about a droid who dreams of becoming a Jedi, is what it comes down to. And I think you could have played with that a little bit more. You know, a machine. Almost, it's a Pinocchio storyline. You know, it's a Pinocchio storyline. A wooden boy wants to be a real boy. It's that analogy along with it, which I totally understand. And again, it's there are some deep themes here, but it's very much, you know, surfacey too and a little more fun. Totally understandable. I liked it better than, say, The Village Bride, but still in the bottom half of the episodes with that. Episode 7, The Elder. This one, again, on my bottom half as far as episodes. Found it interesting as far as exploring the relationship between a Padawan and his master, I think is really what I took away from this one. I never knew there were so many different styles of anime, which, you know, American animation, there are different styles to go with. So Japanese animation, of course, there are different styles of animation. Because if you look at, you know, The Elder versus TOB1 versus The Twins versus The Duel, they're all different styles of animation, but all consider that genre of anime. Which is interesting to a person like me who doesn't know a lot about anime. Episode 8, which is Lop and Ocho. I forget that's her name. This was a one I really enjoyed, actually. You know, having a lot to do with surrogate family and finding your place. Again, a coming-of-age story about, you know, this young girl who grows up with a family that is not her own, but becomes part of the family, and not only part of the family, but the star of the family when the blood daughter, however you want to call it, I guess, turns essentially to the dark side. Again, one that I probably would love to see a little more of if they gave it a chance. I'd really love to see more of the past, like, because they show the beginning about how she met the father and the daughter. Ocho is her name, I think, right? Yeah, Ocho is the actual daughter's name. How she met them. And then we fast forward, and they're fighting over the planet, and the daughter has kind of hardened from where we last saw her, and she was very innocent and hopeful and welcomed this person into her family. And then, you know, she's very cross when we see her, and, you know, all about, you know, against her father. It's something I would love to see what that change happened, you know, the relationship between these two girls, these sisters, and how it changed would be more interesting, I think. Rather than going forward, I'd rather see the past in regards to this one. And then the last one, episode 9, Akakira? I don't know how you say that. To be honest, my least favorite out of all of them, and I don't remember what happens. And so it might be one of those things where I don't remember if I actually finished the episode because I can't remember how the episode ends. I just remember it wasn't something that the animation I wasn't digging and the story wasn't anything too great, I think. So again, I don't remember it very well. But so out of the 9 of them, you know, episode 8, Lopo and Ocho, I really liked. I like the Ninth Jedi. I like Tattoo and Rhapsody. I like The Duel. So about half of them I really enjoyed. The other ones were either okay or less than okay in my eyes. But again, it's something different, something totally new from what we're used to seeing in Star Wars with Lucasfilm. Taking a chance, you know, that's... I'm going to bring it up. That's why I like The Last Jedi so much. It was so different for a Star Wars movie. People hated it because of it. But I loved it because of that. And that's what this is. This is different for Star Wars. It's expanding, you know, letting other people play in the sandbox, you know, and it's not trying to attach it to anything, not making it have any meaning in the grander scale, just taking this world and playing with the action figures, I guess you would say, is really cool. So Star Wars Visions, I enjoyed. If you guys have checked it out, let me know what some of your favorite episodes are. Let me know if you agree with me on some, don't agree with me. Fireback, of course, dayspringdiscussions@gmail.com, Facebook group, and don't forget Twitter. Well, kids, we have come down to it. The last story of the day. I'm running out of time, so I'll say I want to get through this quickly, but I doubt I will. Okay, the new movie came out this week. Venom, Let There Be Carnage, of course, the sequel to Sony's Venom film that came out, I believe, 2018, starring Tom Hardy. So, disclaimer right off the bat, I was one of those people that did not want to see a Venom film without Spider-Man. No connection to Spider-Man. I was not interested in it at all. I'm not a big Venom guy to begin with. And to me, the most interesting thing about the character is his connection to Spider-Man. Eddie Brock's feelings towards Peter Parker, Venom's feelings towards Spider-Man. That's, to me, the most interesting part of this version of Venom. The other version, my favorite version of Venom, is the Flash Thompson version. The ex-military lost his legs, uses the symbiote to be a superhero, but it also kind of corrupts him a little bit. To me, that's a more interesting story with Flash Thompson than what we've ever got with Eddie Brock. I say that, though, as a person who has not read a lot of Venom comics, I'll be that, mainly because he's not my type of character. You know, he's an anti-hero, and I'm, you know, more of a Captain America, Superman, Cyclops guy. That's just me, and that's, if he's your cup of tea, great, awesome, perfect. So I walked into that first Venom film not really knowing what to expect and not really thinking I'm going to like it, and I was right. I completely disliked it. Hated would be a very strong word. I thought it was silly, stupid. Going back to like the campy 90s superhero films, he should have put nipples on his costume and called them Batman, I think would have been more appropriate. Just could not get into that film. I would say my favorite part of that first Venom film was the post-credit scene, which really was just a preview for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Did not enjoy it. I thought it was a waste of Tom Hardy. I thought it was a waste of Michelle Williams. Completely horrible film. But it did really well box office-wise. So they're going to make another one. And of course, at the end of the first one, they teased Carnage, played by Woody Harrelson, which again was just horrible. Anyway, moving on from that, I was not planning on seeing this movie. Was not planning on seeing it. The previews, of course, did not get me interested. No interest. But I knew with rumors and everything circulating with Spider-Man and Sony and whatnot, there was going to be something connecting it. And the post-credit scene buzz, not what it was, but post-credit scene buzz was a humming. So I'm like, all right, I got to see this movie. So I went and saw it. And I was right. I didn't like it. Nope, did not work for me at all. First off, I don't like, what really I don't like about it is how the Eddie-Venom relationship is portrayed. I don't like how he's like a talking head outside of Eddie's back. It looks like I'm, you know, watching Men in Black Part 2 with Johnny Knoxville, you know, where he had that little head that talked to him. Did not work for me at all. And, you know, the character of Eddie Brock, I didn't like him because I didn't know him. You know, I learned more about Woody Harrelson's character, was it Cletus Cassidy, in this film than I ever did over two films, I think, with Tom Hardy's Eddie Brock. It just, it didn't, you know, it didn't, I didn't care about him. I didn't care if he won. I didn't care if he died. I did not care, is what it came down to. And when you don't care about the character, when you don't care about what happens to him, you can't get into the film. And that's just kind of what happened for me with the first film and this film. Just, it didn't work for me. And I'm sorry, Venom at a rave? What? Oh, it didn't work for me. Also, how does the symbiote work? And yes, I'm going spoilers, guys, so it's just going to happen. I'm going to talk post-credit scene here in a minute, so get used to it. When can an organic alien life form hack into a computer and get technical information? something about that connection doesn't seem right for me. And with Venom, he's connected to Brock in his blood. Cletus takes a bite of him, bites into a symbiote, becomes... It didn't work for me, you know. Before they killed the Carnage symbiote, they should have explained it more, I guess, is what it is. It just, they didn't explain it. They didn't care to explain it. They didn't want to explain it. Fuck it. Who cares, you know? They don't care. They just want to see the cool monsters fight. That's what it's all about, guys. It didn't work for me. I'm sitting there watching the movie, and I'm thinking how much more explanation we got, how much more motivation we got from characters in like a film like Captain America Civil War. Civil War popped in my mind about, you know, with Baron Zemo and his motivation about what he was doing, or Steve Rogers or Tony Stark or any of those characters about why they were acting, how they were acting, and getting their points of view. And none of these characters I could give two shits about why they're doing, because they didn't explain to me why they were doing what they were doing. It didn't make sense to me. I will say they did their best. Cletus Kasady, Carnage, I think they did a decent job of filling out that backstory, why he is the way he is. And I like Woody Harrelson as an actor. I don't think this was the role for him, is what it came down to. I don't think it was the right thing for him to do. A little fun fact, though, I was sitting there watching the movie, and Naomi Harris, who plays Frances Barrison, I forget her supervillain name. She has a supervillain name in the comics. I totally forget it. But I remember watching this, and, you know, like I said, I've been watching James Bond, and in the new Daniel Craig one, she plays Moneypenny. And I'm like, wait a minute, there's a connection here, because there was a film years ago called, I think it was Before the Sunset. It had Selma Hayek, Pierce Brosnan, Naomi Harris, and Woody Harrelson in it. And in that film, Woody Harrelson and Naomi Harris played love interest in that film as well. And also at that time when the film came out, Pierce Brosnan was the current James Bond. Naomi Harris, of course, goes on after that to be Moneypenny in the next set of Bond films. I found the connection interesting on those two levels, but that's just me. I'm a simple man. So anyway, the film itself, that's right, I did not enjoy really on any level. I think the only time I laughed, you know, they were making jokes the whole film. The only time I laughed was when Carnage said, "Let there be carnage." And immediately I thought of the Peter Griffin meme or gif where he's like, "Oh, he said it." And I posted it up on Twitter too. And that's immediately what I thought. And when he said it, I thought of that Peter Griffin meme or gif. And that made me laugh. Venom, towards the end there, started calling himself Lethal Protector, which is, you know, his nickname in the comic books. He said it once, and I'm like, oh, they said that. That's cool. Oh, he said it again. Oh, he said it again. Oh, say it one more time. Okay, well, that's lost its meaning now. Now, the film was directed by Andy Serkis, the great motion capture god that he is. He hasn't directed a lot of films, but, you know, he did this one. Directing-wise, again, wasn't the problem of the film. The problem of the film was story and, you know, what the actors had to work with, because they're all great actors. All the main cast are great actors. They could have pulled off some really good material, much like in the first one. You had the right cast. You just didn't have the right story, because the studio didn't care enough to give you a decent story, because they're like, oh, it's a superhero movie. It's about an anti-hero. They're monsters fighting. People will like it. Who cares? Just make it. Yeah, great. And that's where it fell short. That's why I didn't enjoy as much. Okay, real quick, post-credit scene, which once again was the best part of the Venom film, is Eddie's sitting there with Venom, and they're talking about how this the symbiote Venom has, you know, vast knowledge of the universe, part of a hive mind, knows all these things. And the next thing we see, he like switched. He was in the same spot, but it was different. And before anything else was said, I looked at the TV that he had been watching, and instead you saw J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson. And I was like, well, they're doing it. Here it comes. Here it is. And, you know, Tom Holland's Spider-Man pops up on the TV. Yes, I'm spoiling it, okay? I told you the spoilers, okay? If you're listening to me and you haven't seen the film, I do not feel bad for you at all, because that's what I do. I spoil stuff. So anyway, Tom Holland's up there, and the rumors of connecting Tom Holland Spider-Man to the Sonyverse seems to be coming true. Whether the Sonyverse is going to connect to the MCU, especially after that Morbius trailer we got with Michael Keaton in there? Does it all have to do with the multiverse falling apart in regards to Loki or No Way Home or even more WandaVision? I don't know. That's the big question mark. But he hopped multiverses and he licked the TV. I didn't get an idea. I can't remember what he said when he saw Spider-Man on the TV, but he licked the TV, which was gross. And and just, okay, it's happening. It's going to happen. But to me, this signals more the idea that Spider-Man is done in the MCU. You know, when Disney and Sony's contract was up in regards to sharing Spider-Man, they renewed Spider-Man for two more movies. One of them was No Way Home. The other one was going to be a non-Spider-Man movie. And people are thinking, of course, it's going to be Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. And those two movies are going to get Tom Holland's Spider-Man, or at least Spider-Man, out of the MCU. Whether he, you know, gets killed or whether he just jumps over to another multiverse, he's going to go over to the Spider-Verse with Venom and Morbius and the upcoming Kraven, and that's how it's going to happen. You know, the time of sharing Spider-Man, I think, is coming to an end, because with Marvel's help, with Disney's help, Spider-Man is back on top. Spider-Man is now a good brand for Sony. Obviously, he's always been one of the best brands, and now they're ready to take him back and keep all the money, you know? They don't want to share their money now. Now that they think they can, you know, do a good job on their own again, they don't want to share. They want to take him back and keep all the money for themselves. How that'll work out, we'll wait and see. I still think, you know, the best Spider-Man films, Spider-Man 2 and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, were done solely under Sony's watch. I also think they have a tendency to run the character to the ground, see Spider-Man 3 and The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And it took Disney and Marvel to help redeem the character, I believe. So how Sony will do now, did they learn from their mistakes? I don't know. But I will say this, I have no interest of seeing Tom Holland's Spider-Man with Tom Hardy's Venom. I don't like this Venom movies. I don't like the Venom character. I do like Tom Holland's Spider-Man. Why would I want to see them together? Especially, again, there's no connection to the two of them. The black suit, the saga with that, the creation of Venom, Eddie Brock and Peter Parker's feud, all that, you don't have any of that relationship now. So not only did you ruin Venom, you ruined his relationship to Spider-Man that you're hoping is going to sell movies down the road, and that's just stupid in my eyes. So, no, how do you really feel, Sean? Tell me. Yes, that's how I really feel about it. So, okay, guys, I've gone over, so I'm going to shut up in this. Venom, Let There Be Carnage, what did you think about it? I did not enjoy it, and I don't really like how they're coming back now to try to bring Spider-Man into the Sonyverse. I'm not against it, but I don't think the Sonyverse is strong enough or in good enough shape with these two Venom films to bring Spider-Man in. If these two Venom films are an indication to me about how they're going to do their Spider-Verse and how they're going to do future Spider-Man movies, I'm not looking forward to it, I guess is what it boils down to, guys. But you tell me what you think. What did you think about the film? What did you think is going to happen in regards to Spider-Man and Venom in future films? I want to know. I'm sure we're going to be discussing this for a while until No Way Home comes out, and then we're going to be discussing it more. Do you think Venom's going to pop up in Spider-Man No Way Home? I asked my brother this, who's a big Spider-Man fan. He said he feels like there's a good chance now. I can see it, but only as a brief cameo. But I don't know, guys. You tell me. Let me know. I'm going to shut up now and say adieu. So that is it for me today, guys. Of course, fire back, of course, on the Facebook group, Twitter account, dayspringdiscussions@gmail.com. You can find me personally, SlimDayspring12, on Twitter and Instagram. Like I said, I will not be doing a show at all next week. So unlike last week where you might have expected me and I just was too lazy to do it, I'm going to give you a heads up and say there will be no show. But next time you hear from me, I will have seen No Time to Die and I will dive into that. So that's it, guys. Go out, enjoy your week, enjoy your lives, and until next time, may the force be with us all.